The passage that you heard Eileen read is remarkable in a couple of ways. One is that when Jesus was in his hometown, his power was limited. That's such a human experience, to have his power limited. He could do no deed of power there, except he laid his hands on a few sick people and cured them. Another remarkable thing is the power of God through the disciples as they went out in pairs, teams of two. Jesus sent them without money, without even a change of clothing. He sent them out in twos to bring healing. It seems that the power of two together in relationship brings healing and wholeness. Maybe some of you have seen the beautiful documentary about Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He said that love is at the root of everything. All learning, all parenting, all relationships, love or the lack of it. Ultimately, though the world suggests otherwise, the greatest power is not in wealth or security, it's through relationship, through love. Every third Saturday of the month, I have the privilege of being part of Westminster's Ministry of Healing and Wholeness. We have a service in the sanctuary where we have prayer team members who two by two lay hands on and bring a channel for God's healing, whether that is through a healed relationship or a deeper sense of peace or physical improvement. It is a mysterious ministry of twos. Important to remember in healing that we are not in control. So I'm asking you this morning to keep these themes in mind: love at the root of everything, and that while we are on the journey, we are not in control. And I'm going to read the rest of the sermon with my team member, my late husband, Daniel Newman. Yesterday was the second anniversary of his death. And while I was going through some of his things, I found an essay he wrote called "The End of My Days." His words impart some wisdom about what we don't control and about the power of our work of love. So, "The End of My Days" by Daniel Newman. I am dying. I don't mean like everyone is, as in the saying, "Nobody gets out of this life alive." I mean that the overwhelming probability is that I will be dead within the next 3 to 6 months. I thought it might be useful for me to share what it is like to live with this reality. First, a bit of background. I am 58 years old. Until fairly recently, I thought I would live to age 96. Though completely arbitrary, this projection is not unreasonable, as my mother and all her siblings have lived into their late 90s. Quite surprisingly, there has been no cancer in any blood relative on either side of my family, except for my paternal grandfather who had lymphoma. It was, therefore, quite a shock to me when I came down with a rare form of bone cancer, chondrosarcoma, at the age of 48. After failed attempts to treat it without surgery, I had my right proximal femur, hip and thigh bone, and a lot of surrounding musculature removed at the age of 49. After the surgery, I went from being an avid athlete, hiking, biking, running, and doing martial arts, to someone who would never walk again without a cane. However, the surgical margins were clear, and I was cured, or so I thought. 3 years later, I felt a lump in my right thigh and had to have a local recurrence surgically excised. My walking became even more limited, but at least I was cured. That is, until 3 years later, the fall of 2013, when I developed a cough that would not go away. Tests showed that the cancer had spread to my right lung, and the tumor had actually spread to multiple sites in both lungs. It could not be surgically removed. And my oncologist explained that in this cancer, radiation wouldn't work, and response to chemotherapy would be dismal. He told me to get my affairs in order. I would be dead in 6 months. But that was not my plan. I am by nature stubborn and a fighter. I avidly researched, networked widely, and came up with a roadmap to treat my cancer with a sequential alternative approach. I would start with the gentlest, least invasive choices, and progress to riskier, more invasive treatments only if the lighter approaches failed. I was very optimistic and confident. One might even say I was defiant. As time went on, and each successive approach failed or to shrink or stop the progression, I held my position that my story would end like a Hollywood triumph over adversity rather than a tragedy. In November 2015, I received my last treatment. Cutting edge, complicated, potentially very powerful, it didn't work. I felt worse afterwards, and my tumors didn't shrink. It was also the final rabbit in my hat. At that point, I had to admit the cancer had triumphed and I had lost. The overwhelming probability is that I will be dead in 3 to 6 months. At first, I found this realization to be shocking. Despite having known about my cancer for a decade and therefore contemplating the possibility of my death for so long, it is almost surreal to know that my demise is imminent. I am still somewhat surprised that my fondest wish and the willpower backing it, combined with love, prayers, and good wishes of those in my world, is not enough for me to win my battle. It is a stark and emphatic reminder of who controls the outcomes in this world, and it is not me. I must admit to being more than a bit annoyed at those who believe that with enough concentrated intention and meditation or prayer and invocation, cure is available to anyone. Dr. Larry Dossey, who has studied and written about spontaneous healing extensively, makes it very clear that well-intended, highly spiritual and pious people can still die from cancer, while rogues and ruffians without a speck of compassion or spiritual depth may survive. The likes of Krishnamurti and Wayne Dyer are included in those who died of cancer despite their spiritual prowess. No, we do not control our destiny. We can shorten our lives, certainly, but we cannot guarantee their length by reliably preventing or reversing an otherwise terminal illness. Whether you are an atheist, believing that the universe is created by statistical randomness, or a Taoist or Buddhist believing that there are natural laws that all of creation is subject to, or you believe in a loving God, a creator who is either running the show or at least set up the rules, it is clear. We mortal humans do not call the shots. It is both a disappointment and a relief to come to this realization. I recognize no matter how hard I have tried, I do not get to live the long, vibrant life I dreamed of. I also realize at this point, I might as well enjoy as much dessert as I want. I can still look wistfully at all that might have been had I received a longer ticket on this ride and plummet into the unfairness of it. But I realize how fruitless this is, fruitless. I do not want to spend the months that I may have either complaining or wallowing in victimization. I am not afraid of death. I don't know what happens when we die, and I doubt anyone else does either. There are no reputable reports of anyone being resurrected in the past 2,000 years. And do not mistake near-death experiences with death. A near miss in an airplane is not the same thing as a mid-air collision. I suspect that what happens when we die is that the matter that our body was mingles with earth, water, and air of our planet, and tiny bits of us become a part of many other things. I further speculate that the energy and consciousness that we are joins with the collective unconscious, as Carl Jung put it. However, the discrete entity that was Daniel Newman and the self-awareness and memories that went with it no longer exists. If I am wrong and I awaken in a pool of bright light, may I have the sunglasses, please? And my Uncle Arthur and Dog Red are having coffee with Jesus, who hands me a latte and a chocolate eclair, I'm fine with that. But I'm not counting on it. The dying process, however, is quite another matter. As a physician, I've seen many people die, both quickly and slowly. A slow death from cancer, especially like the one I have in my chest, can be a miserable experience of pain and worsening difficulty breathing. When my symptoms get bad enough, I will go on hospice, take drugs, and avail myself of the planned death options available in my home state. I hate the term assisted suicide. It is pejorative and suggests that if not for the decision to end one's life, that a person would live on. If I could live on, I would. I've tried very hard to do so. But I'm not interested in a natural death of extreme suffering as I've seen others unnecessarily endure. As it is currently, I see myself marching towards my end more rapidly than I expected. I have gone from walking briskly to difficulty moving from bedroom to the bathroom and panting while putting on shoes and socks. And I feel the cancer growing in my chest. It pries my ribs apart to gain elbow room, which can be very painful. I'm coughing severely, and though my weight remains stable, I feel progressively weaker. I have also recently experienced something I'd only heard about from patients, which I call malaise. It is an awful feeling of being sick without any other adequate descriptor. It isn't pain, weakness, shortness of breath, dizziness, fatigue, nausea, or aching. For me, it is a miserable reminder that my body is shutting down. When feeling this way physically, it's hard to be philosophical. However, there are some things that are still in sharp focus for me. First, I want to do all I can to take care of those I care about. This is often blandly referred to as getting one's affairs in order. The core of this is trying to leave those that you care about in as good a shape financially as possible, to afford them with the best chances for a good life as they can have. Parallel with that lies my deepest sadness, which one of my patients brilliantly labeled as grieving for those I leave behind. I know how difficult it will be emotionally for those who survive me to deal with my absence. My wife has had plenty of time to contemplate losing me. However, nothing can make up for the absence of the one who loves you, being spooned behind you and holding you close in his arms. Or having your best friend to decompress with at the end of the day, or to brainstorm with you on day-to-day matters. My children are still in their 20s, still young enough to where my presence in their lives could mean a difference in terms of providing them with counsel and emotional support. They will lose their father before their first grandchild is born. I have some very close friends who are already grieving the loss of someone they've known for decades, who's been there to both laugh and commiserate. We are all old enough to know that finding such friends is a rare occurrence in life. There are also hundreds of patients I will no longer shepherd towards health. Theoretically, there are hundreds of patients who could have been helped by me that I will never have the opportunity to treat. I don't have a bucket list. Sure, I would have loved to have seen Angkor Wat, the Louvre, Iguazu Falls, to name a few places. I would have loved to have experienced hang gliding, parasailing, and hot air ballooning. Yet, I recognize that no matter how long one lives and how far and wide one has traveled, there is always more to see and do. I am also very clear I did not get cheated in my life. I understand that my legacy will be somewhere between insignificant and earth-shattering. Yes, I know I have influenced many lives, some profoundly and mostly for the better. And no, I did not invent or discover something that will alter the course of humanity. And I'm okay with that. I understand that after a short period of time, except for those who were closest to me, their lives will have gone on with little thought of me. And I'm okay with that. Life's a funny thing. I think if we get it at all, for most of us, it's close to the end. Why is that? Life is short, and we have but little time to gladden the hearts of those who travel this way with us. So be swift to love and make haste to be kind.